The World Health Organization says the coronavirus epidemic in China now constitutes a public health emergency of international concern. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
So far, only 98 cases have been confirmed in 18 countries outside China, including 8 cases of human-to-human transmission in 4 countries. WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus acknowledges this is a relatively small number compared to China. But he notes the numbers are going up and infections are spreading to more countries.
The main reason for this declaration is not because of what is happening in China, but because of what is happening in other countries.
The committee does not recommend restrictions on international travel and trade. It calls on countries to implement decisions based on evidence, not on rumor and misinformation. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Health officials say that for the first time in the U.S., the new virus from China has spread from one person to another. AP correspondent Jennifer King.
Public health officials in Chicago have confirmed the first U.S. case of person-to-person transmission of a worrisome new virus. The U.S. case is reported to be the husband of a Chicago woman who fell ill after returning from a trip to Wuhan, China. Here's Illinois State Epidemiologist Dr. Jennifer Layden.
He recently began reporting new symptoms and was immediately admitted to the hospital and placed in an appropriate isolation room where he is in stable condition.
Officials are investigating contacts of the couple and say the man said he hadn't been to any large-scale gatherings. Illinois Director of Public Health, Dr. Ngozi Ezike.
This person-to-person spread was between two very close contacts, a wife and husband. The virus is not spreading widely across the community.
I'm Jennifer King.
And you can find more at voanews.com. This is VOA News. U.S. President Donald Trump's impeachment trial in the Senate is in its final hours, with senators asking questions before a climactic vote that will determine if the Senate hears from witnesses, including former National Security Advisor John Bolton. If the trial starts on time Friday, Mr. Trump's lawyers and House managers will have 2 hours each to present arguments. The Senate will then decide whether to subpoena more witnesses and documents. Democratic Senator Richard Blumenthal says senators cannot make an informed decision without hearing additional testimony and looking at additional evidence.
A lot has been made of the fact that there is insufficient information. It's hearsay, it's unsourced manuscripts, leaks. Let's have the witnesses and the documents.
Republican Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina predicts Republicans will prevail outright in the vote on whether to allow the witnesses at the impeachment trial.
I expect not to have a tie vote, by the way. I think it's going to either be 51 or 49. There won't be a tie, I think.
If no witnesses or documents are approved, the Senate could move to a final vote on whether to acquit the president. Iran's missile attack on an Iraqi base earlier this month is putting a spotlight on brain injuries, as the number of U.S. troops who suffered such injuries in the attack has grown beyond the 50 reported earlier this week. AP correspondent Ben Thomas.
Your brain is a very fragile part of your body.
Joint Chiefs Chairman General Mark Milley says the military does take brain injuries seriously.
The unseen wounds of war, for example. Those can be serious or they can be not so serious. It depends on the individual. It depends on the proximity to the blast. And sometimes they are lifelong. Sometimes they resolve themselves within weeks or months.
He says traumatic brain injuries or TBIs can take time to appear.
The TBI manifests itself over time. It's not necessarily instantaneous.
Milley says the Pentagon is studying ways to reduce and prevent brain injuries on the battlefield and to improve diagnosis and treatment. Ben Thomas, Washington.
The Trump administration said Thursday that it would continue, at least for now, its policy of not sanctioning foreign companies that work with Iran's civilian nuclear program. Brian Hook, U.S. envoy to Iran, said the United States would renew for 60 days sanctions waivers that permit Russian, European, and Chinese companies to continue to work on Iran's civilian nuclear facilities without running afoul of U.S. sanctions. Hook said the U.S. wants companies to take advantage of sanctions exemptions for humanitarian relief.
We want companies to take advantage of the exemptions in our sanctions regime for food, medicine, medical devices, and agricultural products.
The waivers are among the last remaining components of the 2015 nuclear deal that President Trump pulled out of in 2018. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, and today is Friday, January the 31st, and here are some of the stories we are covering for you this morning. The World Health Organization has declared the China coronavirus outbreak a global emergency.
We don't know what sort of damage this virus could do if it were to spread in a country with a weaker health system. We must act now to help countries prepare for that possibility.
That is WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus. And Kenya's Aviation Workers Union has said that it will call on a workers' strike if Kenya Airways does not suspend flights to China, citing risks of its employees and customers. And in The Gambia, human rights activists are calling on the government of President Adama Barrow to drop criminal charges against protesters who have been remanded in prison for calling on the president to step down.
After 3 years after removing the dictatorship, it would be almost unbelievable to imagine that we would have a government in place that would be arresting Gambians that are trying to simply exercise their right to protest against what they believe is wrong.
That's Momodo Krubari, Gambian activist. Stay tuned. We have those stories plus sports coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. And we start with the news that the World Health Organization has declared the novel coronavirus a public health emergency of international concern in response to the escalating spread of the deadly disease around the world. The latest tally is 7,834 confirmed cases, including 171 deaths. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the WHO headquarters in Geneva.
Almost 99% of coronavirus cases reported around the world are in China, as are all the people who have lost their lives from this unknown disease. So far, only 98 cases have been confirmed in 18 countries outside China, including 8 cases of human-to-human transmission in 4 countries, Germany, Japan, Vietnam, and the United States. WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus acknowledges this is a relatively small number compared to China, but he notes the numbers are going up and infections are spreading to more countries. He says international action is needed to limit further spread of the disease.
The main reason for this declaration is not because of what is happening in China, but because of what is happening in other countries. Our greatest concern is the potential for the virus to spread to countries with weaker health systems and which are ill prepared to deal with it.
Tedros says the decision to declare the coronavirus a global health threat is not a vote of no confidence in China. On the contrary, he says WHO has full confidence in China's ability to control the outbreak. However, he adds it is urgent that countries worldwide act together to control this unprecedented outbreak. The WHO Emergency Committee says it is still possible to interrupt the virus spread, provided countries take strong measures to detect the disease early, isolate, and treat cases. The committee does not recommend restrictions on international travel and trade. It calls on countries to implement decisions based on evidence, not on rumor and misinformation. The experts advise countries to share full data on all human cases. They say countries with weaker health systems must be supported, and the development of vaccines, therapeutics, and diagnostics should be accelerated. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And Kenya Airways is under pressure to suspend all its flights to China. The Kenya Aviation Workers Union has said that it will call on the workers' strike if Kenya Airways does not suspend the flights, citing risks of its employees and customers. From Kenya's capital, Nairobi, Maureen Ojambo has this report.
Every traveler coming into Kenya will be subjected to screening at the point of entry, whether they are coming from China or not. Kenya's health ministry says this is among the measures put up by the government to contain the situation. Speaking in Nairobi, outgoing Health Cabinet Secretary Cecil Kariuki said that Kenya may not suspend its operations to China yet.
All those passengers disembarking at the airport will be taken through screening at the point of disembarking from the planes, whether or not they are coming from China. Different countries have reacted in different ways. They're evacuating or even stopping flights. That is not on our table because our threshold is not there yet.
The national carrier, through the CEO, said that it is observing the situation and will determine if there is need to cancel the flights. However, the Kenya Aviation Workers Union has mounted pressure on the carrier to reschedule its flights until the virus is contained. The union secretary general, Moses Ndiema, said that failure of the aircraft to suspend its flights is exposing the employees and customers to the virus.
It is not enough for the airline to state that it has taken precautionary measures such as screening all inbound passengers at Guangzhou Airport prior to boarding or training our members on how to handle the situation. They have to suspend China operations. That is the position of the union.
The Nairobi Guangzhou route is one of the Kenya Airways' most profitable, raising more than $120,000 on a round trip, an indicator why management is reluctant to suspend flights. Mr. Ndiema says if the union's plea will not be considered, they shall call for workers' strike.
We are not looking at 3 weeks. If nothing changes drastically, unless we are told in the next 3 days that the situation in China has been contained, then we expect them within that space of time to suspend flights. If they don't, in the next 3 days, we will invoke some measures and we will pull our members from that flight.
Ethiopian Airlines has become the latest to suspend its flights to China yesterday, Thursday. Already, hundreds of people have died as thousands are affected by the virus in China and globally. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
In the U.S., the Senate impeachment trial of President Donald Trump is nearing the end of his second week. As Sega Megani reports, Trump's defense shifted, arguing that even if true, the president's actions were not impeachable.
As his impeachment trial continues, President Trump's legal team has made a striking shift, saying trading military aid for political favors is not impeachable, even if it's true.
Every public official that I know believes that his election is in the public interest.
And Alan Dershowitz argues those officials do what they think is needed to win an election, saying it's impossible to know exactly what their motivation was, personal or public good or a mix of both. And that means their conduct cannot be impeachable. It stunned House prosecutors like Adam Schiff.
If you say you can't hold a president accountable in an election year where they're trying to cheat in that election, then you are giving them carte blanche.
Senators will continue asking questions of both sides today, with a vote expected tomorrow on calling witnesses. Sagar Meghani at the White House.
In The Gambia, human rights activists are calling on the government of President Adama Barrow to drop criminal charges against protesters who have been remanded in prison for calling on the president to step down from power. This followed a violent protest march over the weekend in which 137 people were arrested, including journalists. Two private radio stations also had their operational licenses suspended by the police. As Pan Derimbai reports from Raleigh, North Carolina, the charged protesters face life imprisonment if convicted.
Eight officials of the banned 3 years journal movement have been remanded in prison. This followed the referral of their case to the High Court in Banjul. The local magistrate court in Kanifing said it lacks the legal jurisdiction to hear the matter. The accused persons have been slammed with 3-count criminal charges: unlawful assembly, destruction to property, and rioting. Bas Samba Joe is a Gambian human rights activist.
The charges are so serious. In fact, I've heard them say that during their argument that it can carry up to life imprisonment. Can you imagine in this day and age in our Gambia? And in all honesty, even the original charge included treason. That had to be struck off after some people intervened and told them, you know, they are really taking this thing too far. So that's why I've said that emotions have overtaken common sense in this instance. Because definitely, if you look at the charges, they do not unlawful assembly. You gave them a permit to assemble.
Supporters of the arrested protesters have stormed the Kanifing Magistrate Court on Wednesday where they rallied support behind their colleagues. They chanted anti-government sentiments outside the court premises. Pastor Samba Joe again.
I just want this government to understand that it cannot be giving with the left and taking back with the right. Here's a government that was just being praised around the world for going after Aung San Suu Kyi and Myanmar about these Rohingya Muslims. And then what do we have now? A government that is jailing people heavy-handedly.
Mamadou Coulibaly is a Gambian activist, also a former supporter of Barrow's government.
After 3 years after removing the dictatorship, it would be almost unbelievable to imagine that we would have a government in place that would be arresting Gambians that are trying to simply exercise their right to protest against what they believe is wrong. And to have citizens arrested after they've been issued a permit was not what we fought for in that nation.
Coulibaly thinks that the government should preoccupy itself in improving the country's economy, healthcare, and human rights.
My expectations for this new dispensation was simply a good human rights record, something, a deviation from what we fought against the dictatorship, because what we're seeing now is a heavy-handed government that is trying to imitate exactly what the dictatorship did for 22 years, that is to intimidate, harass, illegally imprison.
He also called on President Barrow to respect his campaign promise of running a 3-year transitional government. Activist Ahmed Manjang thinks that the protesters had violated the terms and conditions of their protest permit.
I'm not ashamed to tell you I'm 100% against 3 years Jodna. I don't think they have no ground or legality to go ahead anyway in the first place to try to force a president to respect a gentleman agreement. How can we equate, you know, gentleman agreement to the constitution?
Manjang has appealed for calm. He warns that there cannot be meaningful national development in the absence of peace. Meanwhile, the government held an emergency cabinet meeting on Thursday to discuss the recent disturbances, among other matters. Information Minister Ibrahim Asila said the cabinet session had centered on the need to maintain calm and peace in the country. He has assured the international community that calm has returned to Banjul. He has also reaffirmed the government's commitment to human rights and democracy. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pan Derimbai reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
And from Gambia, we go to Lesotho, where a scandal surrounding the death of the former First Lady continues to dominate public discourse in a matter that is likely to bring to the end the political career of current Prime Minister Tom Tabane. Police in Lesotho are searching for the country's current First Lady, Messiah Tabane, for questioning in the 2017 killing. Tom Tabane, who was inaugurated as Prime Minister 2 days after his second wife was shot in June 2017, has indicated that he plans to leave office to allow for new elections. And for more on this story, I reached Dineo Sengwete, a reporter based in the capital, Maseru. Now, Dineo, was the Prime Minister planning to seek another term in office?
Last year, if not the year before, 2018, he had made a bold statement that he would run for another term, which would mean that by the end of that coming term, he would be 88. He's 81 in May, and he had spoken about how he still feels very fresh and he can still run the country. Concerns were expressed, obviously, that maybe you're not fit to run the country, maybe just retire because of your advanced age. And, you know, Africa can tell a story about leaders that don't want to let go of power. Anyway, now with this thing happening right now, the opposition put a lot of pressure to say the Prime Minister obstructed justice, therefore he's not fit to be in office, which makes logical sense. There were already internal issues happening within the ruling party between Tom Tabane and who would succeed him. And with that, his party also put pressure to say, this is not a good look for us.
Yeah, we need another candidate.
Exactly, so that we don't have to go to elections again, which would make it like the fourth election in about 8 years, which doesn't look good.
How is this story playing out locally, whether on social media or on TV, on radios? I would imagine that it's a topic of conversation in every dining room, if not a taxi or office right now.
That's correct. So just like a little antidote, in December, a video emerged of the prime minister and his current wife in white robes singing a popular song. And the prime minister was not looking himself, to say the least. And this is a video that was published by the first lady herself, I think in an attempt to say, look at how good things are between us. People went on to meme this video beyond. They created animations from it. They created photographs from it. It even made it onto South African news. So this comes immediately after Tom Thabane's wife's daughter had put out that statement that was basically accusing the current wife of being the murderer of the second wife. Social media attention began around the time of that video. And then as these things happened, more memes came, more, I guess, satire came. People are laughing about it and creating jokes about it. But, you know, for those who are a little bit more politically engaged, there's outrage. People feel like this is not a good look for our country.
They don't think it's funny.
Yeah, they don't think it's funny. They just think it just makes us look bad.
This dynamic between Tom Thabane and his wife, his much younger wife, he's in his 80s. She's very young. She exerts a lot of influence over him. Is there talk that this might have like the Grace Mugabe dichotomy to it?
Yes. It developed basically that character from the very beginning because of how young she was and because of how she was accused of interfering in the running of the country. A lot of people would say that it appears that she's making decisions on behalf of the prime minister, decisions around who's chosen as a minister, around how monies are allocated, and things like that. And therefore, she did kind of develop a nickname where she was called the Lesotho Grace Mugabe, basically.
That was Dineo Sengwete, a reporter based in Lesotho's capital, Maseru. Malawi's Public Affairs Committee, a religious group, plans to call for peace ahead of an official ruling on the disputed presidential election. The High Court is scheduled to announce its decision next week. The election results were challenged by Dr. Lazarus Chakwera from the main opposition Malawi Congress Party, MCP, and by former Vice President Dr. Saulos Chilima of the United Transformation Movement, UTM. In their complaint, the two leaders said that irregularities and rigging led to the victory of incumbent President Arthur Peter Mutharika. Malawian businesses and civil society groups are expressing concern that the anticipated ruling could plunge the country into violence and chaos. Robert Piri, Chief Executive Officer of the Public Affairs Committee, tells VOA's Peter Cloti that his organization will use today's press conference to encourage Malawians to remain calm following the court ruling.
Basically, there is a lot of uncertainty in terms of what will become of Malawi because people feel that the court ruling, either way, whether they nullify the presidential result or else they sustain the status quo, people could go violent or protest depending on what comes out from the court ruling. So indeed, I think the business community and the society at large in Malawi has that particular concern. It's a real concern. It's not exaggerated. But as Public Affairs Committee and other institutions, we are trying to undertake activities in terms of messaging to make sure that we minimize this concern and perhaps see if at the end of the day, despite the ruling going either way, we can have that peace which we have been seeking all along as we are going to 2019 tripartite elections.
Friday, you are holding a press conference. What specific issues will you be addressing this Friday?
Since in our position, which we started already advocating to party leaders to respect court rulings, but at the same time to uphold the rule of law. By this is that for any other reason, if you are dissatisfied with the outcome of the court, then as a party that went to court or was taken to court, you have that right to appeal. So basically, we'll be promoting the same message that we have been promoting, but also joining others to ensure that Malawians do welcome the court ruling So this time around, we can give a chance to the rule of law and to accept the court ruling or appeal should you not be happy. So that will be the message of Friday, 31st January 2020.
Now it's time for Daybreak Sports with Samson O'Malley. Good morning, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, Jackson. We begin the sport with this weekend's fixtures in the CAF Champions League. Mamelodi Sundowns and Wydad Casablanca will renew their continental rivalry when the lock horns at the Lucas Moripe Stadium in Antedjoville on Saturday afternoon. Elsewhere, Etoile du Sahel will be confident of securing a place in the 2019-2020 CAF Champions League quarterfinals when they host FC Platinum at the Reds Olympic Stadium in Tunisia. Etoile know that a win guarantees them a place in the final eight of the competition alongside the likes of TP Mazembe, Zamalek, Mamelodi Sundowns, Wydad Casablanca, Esperance de Tunis and Raja Casablanca. In all the games in Group A, to be TP Mazembe of DR Congo versus Zesco United of Zambia, Primeiro do Agosto of Angola will host Zamalek of Egypt. In Group B, Al Hilal of Sudan will welcome Al Holly of Egypt, while Platinum of Zimbabwe will travel to Etoile du Sahel to face the Tunisian side. Staying with football news, Ashraf Mohamed scored twice as host and defending champions Morocco saw off Mozambique 8-1 to qualify for the semi-finals of the Toto Futsal African Cup of Nations in Lahore on Thursday night. With Mauritius withdrawing from the tournament, Morocco are assured of maximum points and top of the group finish, having beaten Libya 3-0 in their opening game on Tuesday. In East Africa, a high-powered delegation of sports stakeholders are in Zurich, Switzerland for a crucial talks with World Football Governing Body FIFA over the impending Football Kenya Federation elections. FKF President Nick Manuawa revealed that he, alongside other members of the team, will be meeting with top FIFA officials to update them on the fresh football elections that was ordered by the SDT.
The process we have done now cannot be challenged. I'm sorry. Coming back on Saturday, this matter of election is finished. Prepare your nomination papers. Get your Chapter 6 documents ready because we will have nominations for branches.
At the heat of the crisis is a controversial Football Kenya Federation election code. John Ohaga is the chair of the Sports Dispute Tribunal of Kenya.
And it doesn't really matter that the incumbent eventually wins. Mm-hmm. The point is that the people who compete with the incumbent must feel that they had a fair chance.
In cricket news, Sunilu's incredible six-wicket haul helped South African national side the Proteas women defeat New Zealand by 6 wickets in the third women's one-day international in Hamilton and take the series 3-0. Lu's returned figures of 6 over 45 in her 10-over spell as New Zealand were bowled out for a paltry 149. That's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, Jackson, in Washington.
Thank you very much, Samson. And that's it for this Friday, January the 31st edition of Daybreak Africa. We want to thank you for spending this morning with us. Join us again Monday for more African news and features right here on the English Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you all a very good weekend.
The weekend is here. That means another chance to tune in to Music Time in Africa. Hello, everybody. I'm Heather Maxwell. I will take you on an exciting journey of music from Algeria to South Africa, from Nigeria to Kenya, and from yesteryear to today. I also have an exclusive interview with Dutch Moroccan group Samira's Blues. Breaking news about who is performing at the American Super Bowl halftime show. And a song of the week that brings plenty of lively discussion about the Grammy Awards. Miss this one. Join me this Sunday at 1505 and 20500 Universal Time.